want to be the first one to know all about the global pork market? On Swine Trends by APC, the latest updates are easily shared with you.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Swine Trends. I'm Joe Crenshaw, Vice President of Global Tech Service for APC, and I'm your host today for this episode. Today, we are honored to have Dr. Eric Weaver, Professor of Animal Science at South Dakota State University, as our distinguished guest. Eric is a visionary with over two decades of experience in research and product development across various domains of human and animal health, nutrition, and life sciences. And over his career, Eric has had an unwavering commitment to improve animal and human lives at every level, ranging from foundations of basic science and clinical research to commercial success of groundbreaking technologies. Eric has extensive experience related to nutrition, immunology, gastroenterology, life sciences, dietary supplements, medical foods, specialty ingredients, and even raw material processing of proteins. Eric is a devoted member of several prestigious organizations, including the American Society of Animal Science and the American Society of Nutrition. I look forward to this episode as we dive into the world of swine health and nutrition. Thanks, Eric, for joining us today, and I really appreciate the opportunity to visit with you.
Well, it's great to be here, Joe.
One of the topics I'd like to kind of start out talking about, I know as a professor, you also have teaching responsibilities, and you have grad students, and you're preparing students for the future. And, you know, what's different today than when you were in college, going through the graduate school days, and as myself included, I think things are probably a little different today than they were when we were going through this process. So what are you doing to focus the students on to prepare them for the future?
Well, Joe, they are, in a lot of ways, they seem to be so much more talented and worldly than when I left the farm and decided to go to grad school and pharmacy school at the same time. You know, today's students, I think, maybe have a little less of the farm background that we had. You know, kind of some of the practical skills of taking care of pigs out in the cold and lawn waters and, you know, kind of the 4-H project kind of things that we all just took for granted. It was fun, and so we did it. And, you know, you never thought about really doing anything else. Today's, you know, most of our students come from, you know, different backgrounds, I would say, some with some experience and some with no experience. And they all have different paths that they'd like to follow, you know, so I like to tailor, you know, their programs to where they see themselves ending up. They may not know, and, you know, that's all okay. I think I changed majors 7 times, and, you know, at APC, at Lordson Group, you know, had 4 or 5 different opportunities. And so you don't always know what your journey is going to look like. But that's kind of the fun thing about life too. So, but if they can point us in the right direction, you know, it does a lot of good. Cause we've had, you know, I've got students that want to go more towards biomedical, and I've got students who want to go to industry and do swine nutrition, similar to what you're doing, Joe. So, you know, maybe someday your job will open up and students will have a chance at that. But, you know, that's the, there's a lot of different ways that you can take a degree in animal science, especially an advanced degree. And I think that's what we like to do here at South Dakota State, is teach them, you know, some applied nutrition. My goal, Joe, really is to teach them how to feed a pig. If they know the nutritional needs and they can meet the needs of the pig, I feel like they've gained a lot in their time here. So, you know, it's a pretty simple goal, really, but that can take them into a lot of different fields. Just having that one fact, and I hope my career has kind of proved that. Maybe your career has done the same thing. You know, if you know that, you can do a lot of different things in life.
Well, and I agree, Eric. I think, reminding students what the possibilities are, you know, when we maybe start out in animal science, and I've stuck with the field of animal science my whole career, but I was fortunate, I think, to have a great advisor in Ernie Pale at Nebraska many years ago. And Ernie was taking the old green country boy from Tennessee and trying to get him into realizing what possibilities were out there. And I really appreciate that, his guidance and wisdom, and kind of helping point me in some directions I needed to go. And he did that very well. And mm-hmm. I think my experiences as a professor in North Dakota State years ago was to try to give students a vision of what the potential is out there and what the opportunities mm-hmm. are. We never know where we end up at later in life. That's, you know, helping students just understand their real potential and know kind of when to push and when to hold back to. And I know my major professor, Ernie Payer, was an expert at looking at each student as an individual and knowing when to push or when to back off. And he was very good at that. I've gained a lot of wisdom from him during those years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Students have, you know, they have some great ideas, you know, when they start out as master's and PhD students, they're different levels. Certainly the master's students that start out need a little more help, you know, in building a foundation. But, you know, I try to be pretty hands off and let, I'll help them work, you know, yeah. I just helped them weigh 540 some pigs today. So, I'll help do the
You're
work.
You're still young enough to do that, Eric.
That's why I came to South Dakota State. You know, we have great facilities and we can, you know, they're a half our facilities. I can do my pitch, I guess, but they're a half a mile from campus. And so they can learn as fast as they want to learn here. And, you know, and they can take it in a lot of different directions because we have, you know, we have a fair to finish site, you know, that's hard to compete with, I guess, for many institutions. You know, a lot of it is up to them. How fast do you want to learn and how much do you think you can learn, you know, in your time here? It's certainly not an undergraduate degree. I think our students have figured that out. Yeah. So yeah, it's a terrific opportunity though for them and in life, as you say, being able to, you know, point in a direction and you got to gain a foundation. That's what we're here to help them do that. But they also have to learn how to think on their own and they have to decide what they want, you know. That's, I think, the thing that I most like about being involved with graduate students is see them pursue that. That's awesome. So.
And there are so many opportunities for them, as you mentioned. And, I think back in my younger days, Ernie Pale was great at taking us to the industry and visiting with the industry and going on tours, I would say, with the feed industry in those days and having quarterly sessions with the feed industry, you know, to better understand just just the basics about what a job in the feed industry would be, you know, or visiting with producers and interacting with them in extension type position or events and things like that, and just provided a lot of opportunities for us to grow more on our own and open our eyes up more than just the academic part of it. Mm-hmm. And of course, we all spent plenty of time taking blood samples and doing surgeries and spending time in meat lab and cutting up pigs and spending hours and things like that to build what I would call perseverance in terms of finishing the job. And mm-hmm. I think one of the things I always encourage students was to be diligent on finishing the job and carrying through and doing, you know, what's expected of you. And I think that builds good for your resume in terms of being dependable and also being attracted to job positions, you know, as you get out and start interviewing. So, I think, you know, you made some good points with that. And I think I would like to go ahead and transition a little bit more into kind of a general topic of how nutrition and immunity or immune response of the animal interacts and how important is nutrition in terms of building health and immunity of animals and not only animals, but humans as well. And I know, Eric, you've had a lot of experience over the years, both on the human health and swine nutrition side. And, you know, what do you see out there today that's we learned a lot over the years, and what are we learning today that's really helping us better understand how nutrition and immunity in general interact?
Yeah, that's a good one, Joe, because that's, you know, spent when I first came out in the industry, moving to earlier weaning was the rage, you know, moving to SEWs and MEWs and, you know, being able to wean that pig early and still have a sow that could come back, rebreed and be productive. And, you know, we pushed that weaning age down and used, you know, kind of lightning in a bottle, you know, was having plasma at that time and how that contributed to being able to get those pigs started on feed. You know, and it's changed a lot. Now we have a pig that's unbelievably dynamic. If you can keep, you know, everything at bay and just let it grow and eat. So, I've been really impressed, you know, by the performance that you can get, in wean to finish facilities right now. I think we just did a trial that we had, you know, 2.2 feed conversions to 185 pounds or to 285 pounds. You know, we watched feed waste and we made sure, you know, that everything was pretty tight in those pigs, but still it points to the dynamic growth potential, genetic potential of this pig, sow and pig, you know, more pigs than we've ever had, faster lean growth rates than we've ever had. I think it's like, you know, when we came out, I thought it was an exciting time to be in swine nutrition, actually, because of all the change that was going on. And I feel like we have even more change going on right now. So that's a pitch to swine productions or to kids or students interested in swine nutrition, because I think it is one of the most exciting times that there's been. On the immune side, I think a big part of, you know, the magic in keeping group after group productive is just being able to use immune management on that pig, the right, making sure that we keep it healthy from the beginning. I think you got to really work on that first 7 days post weaning. I still think that that's true. Even if you wean the pig older, I think you got to work on that first 7 to 10 days. You get the pig started, right? And it just seems to go a lot easier after that. But we do have some different challenges, you know, certainly some of the F-18s are hitting a little later, you know, based on the receptor that they interact with. But I'd say overall, you know, it's maintaining that immune balance. Don't challenge the pig so much that it has to respond, because it's going to burn a ton of resources trying to fight off a challenge. And at the same time, you can't go on the lighter side either. You have to provide some protection so that it's going to get started a little easier. So yeah, I think the immune system is redundant and you have to keep it in balance. But there are some key factors, you know, we've talked a lot about it. Immunoglobulin in plasma has been super, super beneficial, to those, especially first 4, 5, or 6 days. Zinc oxide has been terrific. You know, copper has been actually a great additive. And all of those, you know, you think of the immune system and you think it's helping keep that pig healthy, you know, for a period of time when maybe its own system isn't covering, as well as it could. I don't know. You know, there's some things, maternal antibodies and maternal immunity kind of gets in the way of the pig developing on its own while it's on the sow. Just doesn't get hardened. Seems like, you know, we used to have, but I think this pig is so dynamic. I think that, you know, the great thing is that it can run like a Corvette. And the bad thing about it is it probably can run, you know, I better not mention a brand on the lower end, I guess. I'm gonna be hurt by that. But, you know, there's other brands that it wouldn't perform. It doesn't perform as well as it could. But yeah, I think I think immune management, John Plusky, you know, was, involved in that term, or he had proposed that term, and I've kind of latched onto it because I think it's just terrific, way of looking at the first couple of weeks post weaning and maybe even after that. But, I think we have to think about managing that immune system, to get good production.
You know, that's right, Eric. And, you know, let's go back, you know, in our earlier days, and I can even remember before we ever had PERS in the U.S., we had other diseases, but
yeah,
so I'm dating myself quite a bit, I think today, you know, we have probably less access to antibiotics and feed than we used to. We're weaning pigs maybe a little later than we did, you know, back in the early 90s. We also, I've seen a change in vaccine use in terms of timing of when you give them. And that's, I think, evolved over the years. And you talk about, you know, building immunity. What do you see as pros and cons of maybe early vaccination or even vaccination in this, while the pig's suckling, and how that might impact post-weaning performance of the pigs, or maybe vaccinating right around weaning time? Sure, it varies by vaccine, but kind of what's your experiences, you know, maybe dealing with, you know, vaccination strategies and nutrition and how they might interact?
Yeah, I think those responses. So I think the vaccine response is always going to be best when a pig is healthy. Right. And actually, you know, maybe less stressed. And so that way tilts you in the favor of vaccinating while on the sow as much as you can. Now, you know, the trouble is you're gonna have some maternal protection that is gonna get in the way of a really great vaccine response, and so trying to balance that is good. But I think the groups that are or vaccinating on the while the pig is on the sow are having better success than, you know, at some point. It's hard on the pig to transport it a long distance, move it into a finisher, and then hit it with vaccines. You know, the stress on that pig just to handle that pig is a lot, let alone, you know, crowding it in a corner, hitting it with, you know, hitting it with a couple of vaccines that have a lot of adjuvant, and they have to. I mean, I'm not criticizing the products at all. They just, it takes, it's going to take some resources for that pig to respond at a time where it's already stressed. So, you know, I think that's, you know, one of those things that I'm not sure if we can reduce that, those stressors, I think we're way ahead of the game in terms of also getting better vaccine responses for later. But yeah, I guess, so I'm pro vaccine, Joe.
Yeah.
I'm especially for E. coli and, you know, some of those that have still, they are still a big problem in the industry. I think we have to keep working more on how do we give that pig better protection? Because I think E. coli is still probably the number one killer of nursery pigs. You know, here we are. I think, Joe, when we were in school, we were fighting post-weaning lag caused by E. coli. And here we are some years later, still talking about that.
Right. And, you know, there's all kind of stressors that affect that. And, you know, kind of what's your general guideline maybe for getting pigs started right and get them eating post-weaning particularly in face of some of the E. coli issues we're having today? You know, what are you finding is maybe more successful applications? Nothing's 100%, of course, but what are people doing today that really helps alleviate or reduce the problem or the instance and severity of the problem?
Yep. So I think those opportunities where you can, I still think that the use of some ingredients, you know, plasma being one of them, zinc oxide, I still think copper in the nursery period, not early on, but later is really effective at getting growth started, you know, certainly to get pigs to a heavier weight by the end of the nursery. And, you know, I think most pigs, once you hit the end of the nursery at a good weight, you're in the rest of the way is much smoother sailing. Right. So, yeah, so higher quality ingredients early on. Again, you're trying to, you know, I think Nick Gabler said, you got to know what you're trying to replace. And those first 3 to 5 days, you're trying to replace mom's, you know, you're trying to replace sow milk. And so what can we do? I think there's still a lot to be done yet. We've gone towards simpler diets. You know, I think taking some of the antigens still are a pretty good idea for those first 5 to 7 days. Again, mitigating some of that response that you get from the gut, I think is a great idea. I think, you know, pigs that start eating, again, we can't have, this goes back to my work in clinical nutrition. You can't starve the gut. It just, right. There's a lot of bad things that happen when you starve the gut. You know, you lose that microbiome and sometimes, so then on top of that, sometimes you decide you're going to treat those pigs with antibiotic because they're not eating. And, you know, you combine those things and we really dramatically changed the gut in the pig in the first 5 to 7 days. And as much as we can, I think, you know, still that transition, does it cost a little more? It probably does than what you'd like. But in the overall cost of raising the pig, it is a very small investment. I think that's the best time to make a little more investment in feed is in that first 2 weeks. That's me on my soapbox, saying I think that's the time is where we have an opportunity to keep the pig's immune system balanced. That's where we have to win the battle, I guess, of not causing that pig to be overstimulated. I think that's, you know, certainly one of the difficulties. So using vaccines to try and support the own pig's own immune system, and, you know, transitioning using a diet that isn't going to overstimulate the gut, because there's a lot of stuff there, I think is, you know, one of the keys to getting the pig started. So, yeah, I like using, you know, I still think there's quite a bit to be done with dairy products. Lactose is a great, you know, carbohydrate source for lactobacillus and some of those bugs that are in the gut. But actually, those bugs are transitioning pretty fast, I think, is the latest microbiome research, is that that is probably a pretty short-lived organism for the gut in the pig, actually. So,
yeah,
you know, I think we got to think a little more about, you know, maybe shorter feeding lactose for a shorter period of time, and in trying to get some of these other feed these other organisms that are going to be more like a mature pig. Yeah.
You know, one trend that's probably more prevalent today than it in our generation, I would say, is, you know, you got groups that's wanting to get away from feeding animal proteins in general. I look at Europe, and in Europe, you know, they banned antibiotics quite a few years ago in feed, and they've also more recently banned medical zinc, you know, oxide use last year, and also you know, from more recently, even reapproved use of some animal proteins like poultry byproduct meal going into pig feed in Europe, you know, has recently been reintroduced or allowed under European regulations. So what's your opinion maybe on initial starter diet, first feed, post-weaning diet for pigs? Should we be using more animal protein or less? The other trend in Europe has been to feed lower protein diets in general to address post-weaning diarrhea issues. And what's your thoughts on that? Are you think they're going the right direction, or are the things maybe they should think about differently?
Certainly they're very valuable. And some of the I don't know if we know enough about what's going on with that pig as far as digestion or protein, Joe. You know, we've taken some of the factors away that reduce, for example, soy protein digestibility. I think the fermented soy products have been a terrific improvement, actually, in cost and availability versus what we had. I still think the pig can tolerate quite a bit of soybean meal, a lot of soybean meal, if we keep it healthy. So, you know, sure. I tend to say yes and yes. Use more animal protein and use more soy protein to keep your costs down. That tends to be where I go with it. I think the pattern of amino acids that we get after digestion of animal protein is a pattern that's superior to what we have in, you know, just using 10 or 12 pounds of synthetic lysine in the pattern of crystallines. There are differences, you know, in the way the pig responds to those. We seem to get better growth rates in these really fast growing pigs when we use more soy protein. or more soybean meal than when we use just synthetics. And so I still think there's a lot to be learned there. There's something there. Why do you get a pound or two increase in growth? And, you know, when I look at the pens, probably if I was formulating feed, you know, commercial feed, I'd want to use a lot of synthetics because honestly, the pigs are drier, they're cleaner. Yeah. Only problem is they're not growing as fast. And I think we have to acknowledge that, I think. But I think I think there's something to animal proteins giving, you know, a little longer pattern of amino acid release than some of the faster release proteins. And I think that's beneficial to the pig. I think it helps that, it helps feed the pig for, you know, the time where it's not eating. And, I think it's short lived. I don't think this is, you know, very long. I think we just have to feed it better for 2 or 3 weeks. I think we have to feed it as great as we can for 2 to 3 weeks. And I guess I'm not a big proponent. I don't think if you slow pigs down those 2 to 3 weeks, that it's a great thing. I think we got to keep looking at how mortality studies are awfully hard to do. You know, but boy, a pig that's growing fast to me is super healthy. It tells me that pig is healthy.
Right. And if you look at large data sets, over the years, and I think even some of the, more recent work with the pork board, they've indicated that, that feed intake in that first week post weaning, it does have an impact on subsequent mortality. When you're counting, profit and loss, maybe we're losing money on pigs right now all the time, but if we're also having high mortality, we're losing even more money. I think sometimes we got to sit back and think about what we need to minimize mortality in general, not only in pigs, but, in weaned to finish pigs, but even in the sows. And I think recently, you've talked some, at Midwest Animal Science about sow mortality and prolapse issues and those kind of things. And, let's transition maybe to that sow a little bit and think about, why are we seeing this? And in your opinion, what do we need to be doing differently to kind of help address that sow mortality issue?
That's another loaded question, Joe. That's another hard one. Yeah.
I like to put you on the spot.
We're going to get them all out there today. Yeah. So my focus in the Midwest presentation was around, prolificacy has gone up and what have we changed in response to that? We still feed 5 pounds of gestation feed for the most part. And so we as nutritionists, I don't think we can say we've increased litter birth weights. We've increased the number of pigs that are born alive, total born, and yet the sow isn't getting fed any more than she was. And we can't look at the demand and supply and say that those are in balance. There's mm-hmm. something missing there. So now how much of that do we need to what do we need to do nutrient wise? In this highly prolific sow. Again, I think it's one of the most exciting times to be in swine nutrition. Nutrition has a role there. I think the genetic role has become much more clear that there is, for especially the prolapse issue, that there's a genetic piece to that is coming forward. But that doesn't get us off the hook for the other or, you know, let's say 75 or 80% of the relationship. If we can explain 20 to 25 with genetics, I'm just throwing a number out. We still got quite a bit of work to do there to figure out what's going on the rest of the, with the rest of the issues. So yeah, we're tending to focus, you know, still let's feed the sow. I'm thinking let's feed the sow like we feed the weaned pig. Let's feed it to what she needs for the period of time where she needs it. She doesn't need it all throughout gestation. We need to look at that last 30 days. You know, we're showing gains. We're showing sow body weight gains of, you know, 30, 35 kilos sometimes in that last 30 days. So that's not her on 5 pounds of feed, by the way.
Yeah.
So 5 to 6 pounds of feed if we, you know, if we give her a little more, which some do, you know. I don't think that as we look at, you know, increasing gist feed level, I think we got to be more selective about some of the things that we're doing there. But I do think there was also a big part of feeding the sow through lactation, feeding her early gestation. She is trying to recover her own resort. She's trying to get tissues to recover, and she's turning over a lot of tissues. The dynamics on the sow is just extraordinary. And so what can we do, you know, even through lactation and early gestation to get her to recover? I guess that's my soapbox, is we focus on feeding the sow for the pigs, for pigs per sow per year. And should we be looking at the sow? And so we actually just did that for Swine Day. We had a sow study where we didn't have any pig data. So there.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about the pig. I want to talk about her. And I think we've missed that, Joe. We still miss, you know, let's talk about how many pigs she weaned. Let's talk about the weight of those pigs that she weaned. And how often do we talk about what was her weight when she was weaned? How many times have we measured it? You know, right. And I see a lot of sow studies that are published that 400, 500, 600 sow studies that we don't see a removal. Right. And I want to say in our small sow herd, that doesn't happen. I can't believe we're that far different than anybody else. And based on the sow mortality numbers, that's still, I'm confident that we're relevant.
Yeah.
What we're seeing is what the industry is seeing.
Yeah.
But why isn't that numbered in our reports on those studies? That it has to be. We have to decide to put those in so that we can go back in time. And, you know, it's important to have that information. You've done a lot of, you know, reviews from past studies, meta-analysis that are extremely valuable. Boy, we're going to wish that we had all those removals. You know, why did we have 4 or 5 die on those treatments? It would be, I'm afraid we're going to go 3 or 4 or 5 years down the road and say, geez, I wish we had those, you know. But yeah, so that's the sow mortality. I think we have to, I kind of went on a long spiel here, but I think we got to go back to exactly what are the demands of that litter? Because the litter is pulling from her. There's no question about it. So are we keeping that in balance?
Right. And, you know, in particularly late gestation, and you've got not only increasing weight of the litter, you know, late pregnancy, but you're getting the mammary gland starting to develop or in preparation for milk production. And you got just basic body maintenance on that sow, you know, and particularly that gilt still growing and putting on muscle, they're not up to mature body size. And sometimes I think we see some more issues maybe with gilts or first litter sows and even maybe second litter sows because we're not thinking about, you know, the physiological differences between a younger sow and a mature sow, you know, maybe parity two or parity three plus sow. And do we need to feed them, think about how to feed them more as individuals, I would say, you know, and then we get into production units that we may be short on labor and we're just not giving that individual attention these animals really need. You know, and, you know, in production systems to, you know, to give them that extra attention, you know, just feeding them, much less, you know, attending to, you know, pigs as they're born. And, you know, sometimes we start forgetting about the sow and, you know, just worry about the pigs. And so sometimes we got to remember that those pigs wouldn't be there if it wasn't for that sow. So,
yeah.
So
if you
got to feed that sow right and keep that productivity in those sows.
I think it's right.
Longer term.
If we had PSY, Joe, we'd have capital P, little s, capital Y, pigs per sow or pigs per year. Oh, might have skipped the sow. You know.
Yeah.
We have to give her. We have to put more importance on her needs. And, you know, I don't know what it's going to take, but we need to really focus on where her needs are high and, you know, how can we keep her in better health? You know, the other thing is she's ramping up on feed intake really rapidly. And, you know, she's increasing feed intake remarkably. And, you know, that has its own set of issues. You know, you see ulcers, gastric ulcers in sows, you know, not related to just particle size, but probably, you know, on their eyes. There's just a host of issues there when you look at all the causes of sow deaths. There are a lot of challenges there. Prolapse is obviously the most visible one, but if we can get that under control, what's next? Well, a lot of the rest are still the 40 to 50% of sow deaths are of unknown cause.
Right.
And that makes it really hard to work on. We pull our hair out doing sow work up here. We're looking closely at them. We can do what the industry can't do, and that's that we can look, you know, at everything on those numbers of sows. We can monitor glucose, take a lot of blood. We can do a lot of things that the industry can't do because they don't have, you know, you don't have time to do it. So that's what we kind of fit in that mode, I guess, is research. You know, we got to do the pilot level type work.
The basic.
We got to do the basic.
Fundamental research. Yeah.
Basic applied, you know, it's kind of right in that.
Basic applied combination.
Yeah.
And that is sorely needed. And you know, that would kind of transition us, I think, to kind of maybe ask another question is, you know, what kind of research are y'all looking forward to doing at South Dakota State in the near future related to swine health and immunity, whether it's in pigs or sows? What's on the horizon, Eric?
Yeah. Well, you know,
and plenty of topics for students to dig into. I know that
there is a lot of fun stuff. I would, you know, one of the things that I think we really got to go back to is kind of it might be a bunny trail off of Adam Mosier's work on, you know, the stress that the pig is under and, you know, how that affects feed intake. I mean, this is really applied, right? But do we have to just increase the weaning age of the pig? Can we keep the sow productive? Can we just lessen the stress on the wean pig, you know? So we're thinking about doing that first, you know, taking a look at those combination of vaccine strategies and just keeping the pig quiet for keeping it in its crate. We can do that. Industry can't do that. Well, they could do that, but it would really mess up industry production. It doesn't mess us up, you know, so.
But if you got can show a real benefit of doing that, you know, I think the industry can figure out how to make it work.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. You know, let's go back to SEW, right? Yeah, yeah. That couldn't be done. And then all of a sudden it was being done on mass scale, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, it can be, yeah. If you find, you know, that is.
Well, and some of your students may, you know, research that and figure out some things and, you know, end up working with, in a production company or feed company, figuring out how to apply it in the field and making it work in a larger system. And I think it's important. I think it's very important we maintain, some basic fundamental research at universities to help the industry sort out some of these problems or issues. Certainly, I think our genetics today are quite different than they were back in our day, you know, and probably, you know, we've got a sow that's, a locomotive today compared to a little small train, you know, pushing along up the hill, you know. We've got, sows producing a lot of milk and a lot of large litter size, and we got to really stop and think about the physiology going on there. And we need to go back and do some of that basic physiology work, I think, with these modern sows and also the pigs, even at weaning, because I think some of the genetics, some of these pigs seem to be a little slower taking off eating than they used to. And I don't know if that's a genetic relation or just management or what, but, it seems like they don't eat as much today as they did 20 years ago in that first week after weaning as a whole, you know, looking at data I've looked at. And we really need to, go back and really think about, how vaccination strategies, good or bad, may have some impact on how that pigs eat, takes off eating, and it may help it, it may hurt it, depends on the vaccine, maybe.
And the opposite, if you can keep it eating, through that vaccine, I mean, if that pig is healthy when you vaccinate it, you're gonna get a better response. I mean, that's
clear.
That's
very clear.
If you vaccinate a pig that's already stressed, dehydrated, and doesn't have any feed in its gut, I want to do that study, Joe. It's just
okay. Well, we need to figure some things out on that. No. Mm-hmm. And I know you've got some fine students at South Dakota State, and I think there'll be some great work coming out of South Dakota State in the future.
So, we're working at it. We are working at it. I can tell you, we spent a lot of time in barns, you know, so when I talk about students, wanting to learn how to feed a pig, if they haven't had the experience, they get that right away. we've just had Joe Halber just joined us, and Joe had an animal science degree, but he didn't have a lot of on-farm experience. And so, he's one of the students that I helped weigh pigs today. And Lauren Olson's done a lot of sow work. Well, Lauren's background was in horses, but we convinced her that this would be an interesting line of study for her. And so, I think they can certainly serve to bring other students on board too. They're good mentors. Lauren's a great mentor for some of the undergrads that we have working at the unit. So, we get a lot of kids involved. I tell you what, we did we just did a biosecurity update at the farm, and I walked in the room and there were between 25 and 30 students that were actively involved with projects at the research farm. So it was kind of heartwarming to see actually that there's that many students interested in pigs, you know.
Well, it's kind of like, being a coach for a football team like the Jackrabbits in South Dakota State, you know, they're doing pretty good this year.
Yeah, right? I wish I could say that I was that good. Yeah. They are doing a great job. Yeah. They are, it's one of those things, they got a bunch of good senior leaders, you know, have been here a while and they're talented, and that leads to, you know, a really successful team. Yeah. But you have to definitely, those players developed while they were here, you know, and so the coaches did a great job developing them, and it leads to success to the younger underclassmen too. But I think, you know, that's what we're trying. We've got some great, steady leadership here, between the other faculty, Dr. Tyler and Dr. Levesque and Dr. Samuel and a couple of, you know, really good, we call them, I think they're research associates, but Jinsu Hong and Jorge Palencia both are great at working with students, you know, so that's how you end up with 25 in the room, is you have a lot of people helping students learn about pigs. And, it's a pretty remarkable animal. You and I have both built our careers on the backs of the animal, because it's got a lot of similarities to human and other species. And so, you know, we can learn. There's still a lot left to learn about the animal, the pig, that's for sure. So.
Well, the more we learn, the more questions we have, I think.
Yeah, I know.
Studies. The more we realize how much more we need to know.
So, they trick us. Yeah.
Yeah.
You think you got it figured out, and you do that study and it just, what happened? How did that happen? You know, but.
I always told my students, you know, the pigs don't lie. We can think.
That's right.
We can think what things should look like at the end of the study, but pigs tell you what's going on, you got to learn to observe and also the data is what the data is, part of it is, being able to interpret what's going on in that pig, there's just so much more to learn than we'll ever figure out a thing. And so I'm telling your students, you've got a whole lifetime of things to work on. Mm-hmm. So things will keep changing too. And you'll have more challenges coming up to solve, and solutions to come up with. So, and opportunities as well.
I really try to make sure that they're observant when they go into a barn. You know, it is not, things are not always great in there. You know, we live in a world of weather changes. You know, we have snow we have sunshine and warm in the morning, Joe, and by evening, you know, it's below zero and sleet. And so, you know, our barn, you know, we have to really be on our toes. You know, we have all mechanically controlled barns. I said, you're in control, you know, you're dialing in the control of that environment. You know, that pig's in a pen. It'll tell you whether you got it right or not, but
yeah, sure.
You have to watch it. You know, there's all kinds of things going on there. And, you know, you have the controls. You're the captain of the ship. But, you know, things in a study, you know how different they can be from what you drew it up. You know, we had, you know, a group that just had a disease challenge that we didn't expect. And it's like, boy, that, you know, one thing can lead to another. And you say, you know, you got to get it. You got to be prompt and get it stopped. You're the captain of the ship. You got to try and figure out what's going on, you know. But it's a, even though it looks like it's this nice controlled environment, it's anything but.
Well, the thermometers can get stuck sometimes, or monitors can be faulty sometimes, and or fans get stuck, or frozen open,
or something real simple.
There's a lot of things that affect the environment for that pig as well. So
we had a, we had to shorten the weaning age up on a group of pigs. And okay, did you do anything different on temperature in the barn? You know, what did you do environmentally to take care of that 15 day old pig as compared to a 18 and a half or 19 day old pig? They're a different pig. That's a lot different weight, you know. That pig in that last 4 or 5 days is gaining on mom. It's gaining a pound a day, pushing a pound a day. And so, you know, you got two, 3 pound difference for sure. You know, 3 to 4 day old difference pigs. So what have you done environmentally to account for that, if anything? And did you do anything different nutritionally to account for that? You know, well, it's, you know, it's harder than raising pigs. Isn't that easy? You get a lot of pigs pushed into, from that weight age range, pushed into those groups, you know, to fill a barn or to do whatever. And so it's a good lesson, you know, for them to see that, how much different that pig is compared to the older age pig. Might also say we need a little more safety margin on the upper end, you know, to make pigs a little older. But still, I think we know that that's a pretty dynamic age. It changes the needs of that pig quite a bit. So,
well, I appreciate the time today, Eric, and, you know, the discussion. You know, we could probably go on forever.
Yeah, we could. We could, Joe. There's a lot of topics. Covered some big ones, though. So,
but I think
those are near and dear to my heart.
You know, I would ask just one more question, and you know, and maybe you, from your years of experience, what kind of words of wisdom would you give to a new or young nutritionist today, you know, about how to deal with life in general and life and starting out in a career?
Well, yeah, I would say, you know, find a good team to work with, find people you really like working with, and, you know, and work hard together, you know, have fun working with them. That can be hard, you know, it can be hard to do sometimes. There's ups and downs, and, you know, and be a good, steady teammate, and, but work hard, learn a lot, you know, don't think you know everything. You know, there's just, the pig will definitely humble you, you know, in circumstances. Other than that, circumstances in life will humble you too. You know, there's just times where you're not in control of everything. So, you know, make sure you have a good team around you personally and professionally. I've given a few students that advice, and, you know, don't always look at the bright, shiny objects. Look at, you know, value your teammates. And then, you know, you also got to remember, you reap what you sow. You know, if you invest wisely in the right things, you'll have a good long career and do what you want to do. You know, that was one of the things that I liked about coming back to the university is I wanted to get back into doing just, yeah, it may be crazy, but I enjoy just being in the barn and looking at what, being hands-on on the pig, Joe. So, you know, this is, I guess I shouldn't say it's a sabbatical to me, but it's a fun time to be doing nutrition research. You know, and so always work towards the goal of doing what you want to do, you know, having a passion and being able to go do what you want to do. You know, what you feel called to do and what you would really value in life, to be able to do. So yeah, you have to always kind of work towards the goal too. What do you want it to look like at some point? You know, that's, you got to have a purpose for sure. You got to know that there's a purpose for you and that you're valued and that, you know, there's, try to find that that you want to do that will make a difference in life. So, you know, I think that for this period in time is doing some nutrition research. And, you know, enjoy doing it. Enjoy doing what you like, you know, do what you want to do, and what there's value in. So that's a whole bunch of things. See, I threw it back to you, Joe.
Well, yeah. And I can agree with you on that. We're going to face all kind of opportunities and issues throughout life. And, you know, a lot of
Probably by the end of the day, Joe. You know,
by the end of the day, you're going to go home and take some ibuprofen probably after weighing those pigs all day. you know, life is, you know, full of opportunities, and you know, it's what you put your trust in and seek wisdom, and don't think you know everything. None of us
ever probably will. Be as a young person starting out, you know, man, I thought I did know everything, Joe. I was sure of it, you know, but yeah, you get a little, and things change, you know,
things change,
you know, even, I mean, look at the pig as an example. I just got out of this meeting where, you know, we crossed the 16 pig live born, hurdle in a university sow herd, you know, and you say, man, you know, 2 years ago, and we were doing well at 13 and a half to 14. And you know, things are changing, and you know, that should be something that really lights the fire under, you know, people to try and make sure we're doing the best we can. You know, that's the old servant mindhood of, you know, how well are you taking care of the kingdom, right? So,
you know, we got to be good stewards.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
well, thank you very much, Joe. And really appreciate you joining us today, and wish you all the best at South Dakota State and your students too. Thank you.
Well, you know, you're always welcome. Come up and see us.
I'll be great
seeing you guys. Yep. Yep. They like, you know, we like to have visitors. There's always something you learn from, especially people like yourself, Joe, that have been around have seen some change.
Well,
not to put you in any circles or anything, but we had Mike Brum up last year.
Oh.
And so, you know, maybe we could get up one more of the senior guys to talk about things. So,
well, I wouldn't mind doing that.
All right. Very good.
Well,
okay. Thanks, Joe.